No.
So there's some to pay for.
So we have a short amount of time to accomplish a lot. And in the interest of using our time well, what I thought we would do is hold off on having the rest of our presentation and instead go back to our brainstorming document where we divided up into different categories. These are the category 1, 2, 3, 4 that we referenced on the reading list. And inspired by our competition group, make sure we have questions formulated that correspond to those topics and start dividing up into groups to figure out who's going to champion certain topics and start focusing on them. And I thought if by the end of this session we can have a set of questions that we would like to answer that track our core topics and divide up into sub-teams to deal with those issues, that will be a good accomplishment. So that's the plan. I think Alice is going to bring up our Yeah, well that's why I'm gonna have Alice bring it up so that we're all on the same page.
We should go to the Adobe. We have our own Adobe room?
Yes.
Oh, yes? How is it called? Sorry?
It's in the calendar.
It's in the year for
it.
I type my Adobe
no,
I have
calendar.
So CCT review coordination.
Safe girls and plus breakout. Jesus, so muddled now. The congressional room.
Congressional?
Is that where we are?
That was the other one.
Time zone 7:30 to 8:30. Wrong time zone?
Oh, it's 7:30, 8:30 somewhere.
Okay.
So this is going to be, for everyone trying to connect, this is going to be the calendar for the Safeguards and Trust breakout session Tuesday at this time.
Yeah, which is now. So
which
that's
is now.
Congressional rooms, that's it. Review coordination. Is that it? CCT review coordination?
Safeguards and Trust breakout session.
I couldn't read it.
Man, you guys are all the same. Cool.
James can read it just fine.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me what it says, please? You can read it out to us all. Proper English.
It says that it's waiting for the HTTP comments.
I'm in the Safeguards and Trust, the wikis.
The CCT review team has become unresponsive and we need to kill it. Anyone want that telling me?
Hypermail?
Well, that would be an interesting action to capture.
Yeah, that's right.
CCT review team has become unresponsive. Kill or wait.
I'm not on the team. I'm just observing.
David.
I apologize.
Yeah, so instead of getting on the Adobe Connect, you can also just get onto our sub-team page. And our brainstorming document, I think our last version is version 7 in April.
And then we have
on Adobe.
The only way to get this document onto Adobe Connect is download it and then upload it to the Adobe Connect.
Good.
By the way, you're just sharing your screen and you'll have to scroll for everybody to see.
So are you starting at the top? I'm so sorry.
Who's controlling Adobe Connect?
iCan.AdobeConnect.com, and what's the next part?
CCT review dash coordination.
Coordination. Is to make sure these are the questions we're comfortable with. Things need to be reformulated, if things need to be added, so that we have an agreed set of questions we want to answer within this, within each category, and then we'll start dividing up into teams for who's going to tackle what question. So, thoughts, Carlos?
I see we have down there other more restricted boxes. And the problem I have with this first list on the first page is that it's too general,
mm-hmm.
based on Brian's paper. Brian makes a comment that there are two.
I'm having trouble hearing you, Carlos.
There is this application perspective, and then there is this user perspective. And when I see the list here, it says consumer, which according to our definition are both applicants and user as
mm-hmm.
per our charter, but the question is, are we going to keep it in the general case of consumer there, or are we going to separate applicants from final users? It says here all the time consumer. So
mm-hmm.
according to definition, this is the general case. Are we going to keep it general, or are we going to at some point separate the two components of consumers as per all definitions?
Well, it's a fair question. I guess I would put the question back to you. Do you think all the categories, do you think all the categories necessarily encompass both users and applicants? I mean, my guess would be no.
Exactly. That's why I would prefer to start looking at the process. This is a nice checklist, so to say. I would keep it as a checklist, but then I will try to spread it because we have all this overlap with the application process and applicants and so on, and we have a lot of safeguards that are looking for cases that are looking
right.
for the final user botnets and
software ones. So just as a general statement, I think we need to realize that, as based on our discussions regarding the application guidebook, that we are not going to be duplicating work that's already going to be done by the plenary group for the application guidebook. So just as a general premise, I think we're all agreed on that. That's already being done. Now, in terms of the definition of consumer, which includes end users as well as other categories, I think it's registrants and applicants, includes all of that. That's different. And maybe a way to approach it is to the extent we come up with a list of questions, if it needs to be further segmented into a discussion of how does this affect the end user, how does this affect the applicant, how does this affect the registrant, that's certainly something that we can analyze as needed, knowing that each group isn't going to be affected the same way. Does that make sense?
We'd have tendency towards the user because we're in the trust part.
That's right.
Okay. Yes, that's okay. I like it that way.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just a checklist.
Yeah, it's very different to
prioritize.
Right, and
everything is important. But.
Right, and that's why I wanted to kind of get at creating a new document, which gets a little more, which gets us more focused into specific questions, and then we can delve into the segmentation as it's needed. I think it's not going to be needed every time, but it may be needed certain times. Okay, so with that clarification, I want to hear people's ideas on what are the big questions in terms of safeguards and new GTLDs that we want to answer. Or the other thing we can do is start off broadly, what's our big question here that we're going to be dealing with? Which I take as, what has been the impact of the new GTLD program on consumer trust? And then we have to work our way down to how we're grappling with that. So thoughts, what my intent here is to come up with a list of questions akin to our competition folks that we're gonna be answering.
Lori, I'm actually opening up the presentation I gave about a month ago where I had some questions.
Okay. Are we still having trouble getting to the right place?
It keeps trying to kill the something in my...
I don't know if it's going to be that helpful, I thought. it's very specific to the DNS of these safeguards.
How's the temperature in here for folks? Too cold, too warm?
I'm sorry, it was too warm. I put it probably too cold.
Stop.
Yes.
So, you know, thinking about the subject matter of this sub-team, is safeguard consumer trust, right? So I guess one of the questions in my mind is, do you see those as sort of two discrete exercises that you then, you know, sort of try to synthesize, or do you see them as two streams of work that are, you know, parallel but related, or one, are you trying to come up with one set of questions that addresses both, were the safeguards effective, and two, what's been the effect of the program on consumer trust?
Yeah, no, I do understand the question.
So I would keep it separate and bifurcate it because consumer trust could be affected by a multitude of things that the safeguards did not anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a much bigger thing that we're going to be looking at there because it might be that we're recommending new safeguards to be created. Even if all the other safeguards were highly successful and fantastic, it's just there weren't enough safeguards in place. That could be a conclusion. And then a separate thing would be the critical analysis of the safeguards.
Does that sound, what do folks think about that? Does that sound like a reasonable approach?
Sure.
Yeah?
I'm not quite sure I understand it. What do you mean by, so sort of bifurcate the analysis of safeguards and trust and not try to sort of...
Well, they'll certainly be related. You certainly look for every single relationship you can find. But, and perhaps I misunderstood your question about... Did I misunderstand your question then?
I think so. Yeah. You were saying that they were two.
Yeah, so I'm just saying I think that there's two separate areas of analysis where there are safeguards created to protect consumers going forward with the new GTLD program, but those safeguards may not have factored in every single thing that could affect consumer trust.
Right.
And so therefore that consumer trust universe about how consumer trust was impacted
right.
is going to be a broader
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
You're still going to draw relationships and all that.
Okay.
But meaning you're going to, you have discrete safeguards you can look at. And you can pick apart those safeguards and come up with research questions for each one of those.
Right.
And come up with your methodology for how you're going to tackle how effective that safeguard was at its purported goal.
Right.
Whereas consumer trust, we're going to answer in a broader way, looking at what we're talking about, the DNS abuse, because as we know from the Nielsen report, consumers could have a perception of being able to trust something, but perhaps that trust was misguided because they're duped more often with new GTLDs or you know whatever it might be. There could be just consumer trust affected in a multitude of ways that aren't taken care of by the
consumer. Right.
Okay. Does that make more sense?
It does, yeah. The way I would sort of suggest approaching this is have sort of high-level columns, because essentially what we're proposing, even if it's just highly theoretical or hypothetical, is in some fashion, even if it's minuscule, a safeguard has had some impact on trust in some, it might be that small, there might be many other variables, but I think categorizing it, say, you know, a safeguard, what the safeguard is, on the other side, the sort of response variable, trust, and then the proxies for trust that we're trying to sort of assess, because presumably there's going to be proxies for trust that we want to look at, right? Is that?
I think that's going to depend on the safeguard.
Okay.
As to what's susceptible, especially because when I'm thinking about your presentation with that quite a long list of safeguards,
right.
Not everything is going to be as susceptible to having a proxy or not.
Right. Do we have, so if we take trust as kind of the response variable, if we're saying that the new GTLD program has impacted trust, we're proposing a hypothetical relationship there. So in some level, we have our safeguards. We know what they are. So that sort of side of the column is ticked. But on the trust side of things, what are we sort of analyzing the effects of? What are the sort of proxies for trust that we're looking at? I guess perhaps it's a rhetorical question for now, but that's the way I tend to think of it. A safeguard, even if it's purely hypothetical or just purely a mental exercise to look at it in terms of having some effect on trust, helps kind of structure each sort of sub-study, if you want to call it, or sub-study of each safeguard's impact on trust.
So maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, but isn't the first question, has the safeguard been triggered? I mean, has it applied at all? And then if so, how, you know, what's the impact? And then looking at what's the assessment of that impact? You know, sort of qualitative consumer trust survey kind of stuff. But you look at each one and you see if it's been exercised at all. If it hasn't, then that's the end of the analysis.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just say, you know, too early or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then continue to the extent that it's been triggered or exercised.
Right. And then you can start assessing things like impact and,
right.
and whatnot.
And then from the consumer trust universe, you could figure out, there was this issue. We thought this safeguard would have been applicable, but this safeguard was never used.
Right.
It seems tangentially related, why was that?
You mean if apart from whether or not a safeguard has been triggered, you say there was an incident and it has had an impact on trust and
yeah,
right, yeah, absolutely.
And I also I don't necessarily think there's going to be a neat relationship between a safeguard and trust. Like far from it.
Mm-hmm.
Given this, our exercise yesterday and how difficult it is to sort of tie things together in that way, but I think just as sort of a exercise as we move forward, sort of build out our list of questions, I think, thinking that way and
mm-hmm.
how you sort of describe it as well will be useful.
Yeah, I think that's a useful construct, Jamie. And I also think in certain cases we may have information on what the intent of the safeguard was. And if that's the case, we probably would want to include that as well, because when we're asking about the impact, a useful question is, what was the intent, and was that intent achieved?
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. Right. Yes, absolutely. Because a lot of what the board did was, in its view, a lot of the DAC advice was not implementable, but in its literal terms, and so it tried to implement the spirit of it and came up with something that was feasible. And so a legitimate question is, if it didn't work, you know, would a different interpretation have
mm-hmm.
been, or if it did work,
go ahead. Brooke, just chime in one more time on that there.
And that's Drew.
Hi, this is Drew for the record, and I don't think I said my name at all on the record, or anything.
You heard that sounds like that one in the past was Drew.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Transcriber. I think going back to our discussion from the bigger room, examples of when this issue might come up where a safeguard could have been triggered because the incident maybe was there, but it wasn't triggered, would be a standing issue, right, where there's a problem, but whoever it was didn't have standing to utilize the safeguard, if we're talking about maybe a dispute resolution safeguard.
So it could be a standing, this is Jamie for the record,
it could be a standing issue. It could be that there just wasn't a safeguard to address that mm-hmm. issue that had a negative impact on consumer trust.
Yep.
Yeah, although let's try and keep the examples to what we're dealing with, which would probably usually is not going to be a standing issue.
Well, I'm thinking, and I know we haven't gotten down there, but when we're talking about the rights protection mechanism,
okay,
that's where I'm thinking you,
right, right.
you could conceivably see that in there, perhaps. I don't know.
Okay, well, actually, this sounds like a logical approach. And in that regard, maybe we can, Alice, can we break down those questions? Can we just, list the questions one after the other and have them indented just so that they're, yeah, right. In that regard, what I think we're going to be doing then is really delving into Brian's list of safeguards and dividing up, I think one way to divide up the work for the safeguards, and I would suggest that this is probably something we're all going to want to work on because it's one of our biggest chunks, I'll say. That's a technical word. Is thinking about the safeguard and which particular sets of safeguards we all want to be focusing on. Because there are, how many of them are there? There are, 30 or so?
Yeah, something like that. I think 20, 25.
Yeah. So that's probably an exercise we're going to want to focus on. I will ask folks to take a look at the safeguards and think about which ones you want to be grappling with. So that's great. Let's do that as an action item. And if we have time today now to do that, we'll do that. But before we do that, let's finish going through the list so we can finish our sort of buckets of questions. So as we're going down this list, impact reduces harm. I think that these other questions about the impact and reduces harm, I think that is subsumed in these questions above. For what was the impact, what was the intent achieved? I think we're going to be asking, within that, what was the impact of a particular safeguard, whether there was a harm that was reduced or whether there was too much of a cost compared to the harm, that sort of thing. So I think these bigger questions encompass that sort of analysis. So my question to the group now is, we think this list of questions for the safeguards and the public interest commitments and the trademark protections, are these questions broad enough for us to engage in the kind of analysis we think is going to be useful here? Or do we need to ask any more questions? So, Carlton, are you stretching, or would you like to stay? Carlton's going to do the stretching lead. When we need it. Do we need to add anything here? Okay, I'll take silence as no for now. Go ahead. Okay, Drew and then Brian.
Drew, for the record. I would just say, when we came up with this, we were just kind of brainstorming variables that might be a factor in whether or not there was an impact on harm. And so now under this the current analytical construct under which we're going to work, I don't know that this list really makes sense. So regulators.
Yeah, so I think these go away.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, those are things on the back end. We're going to say, why did this happen? Oh, this was a regulated deal.
Right, and, you know, we'll be we have a version 7 of this document, so we'll be able to look back if we want to ask, if we want to go back to questions that we, you know, we think are useful. But for this document, Alice, I would say we probably want to then get rid of all of the impact reduces harm, all the way down to, I can't scroll because you're in charge of the document. but I can keep going. I was not doing that on my screen. There we go. I would keep going. Not down to compliance. I'm sorry. Can you scroll up? So that we're still in the, yeah. So we'll keep going down to the end of regulated GTLDs. And I would take away the compliance, too, because that's really a data request. Yeah, because this is, we're creating a different document now.
And compliance as well. You know?
Yeah, and compliance as well, because that's really a data request. And actually, I'd remove all the gray stuff, too. Go ahead, Brian.
I was pointing for myself, but I think I could say something just looking at this. I told you I'm a fan of making tables and matrices, so I see this table emerging, sort of safeguard, intent,
mm-hmm.
result, and probably one other column too, broken down, and you know, and then each team goes through and starts building that out,
right.
And then maybe start putting in resources, another box like a resource link. I don't know.
Yeah. And before result triggered.
Triggered. Yeah.
Triggered a better result because, like Jamie said, we would never get the result if it wasn't triggered.
Exactly. I mean that.
Safeguard intent, triggered result. Yeah. I can see that. Okay, so I think that's a useful construct. Is everyone comfortable with that? Yeah? No?
By when do we want to use the
What was I going to do for E2 or for E2 class?
Well, I'm thinking we probably can divide the safeguards into, I think there'll be natural buckets that they fall into. For example, we know that there are rights protection mechanisms.
Right.
We know there's a small bucket of that. So I'm thinking there are likely buckets of these.
Yeah. Well, I had them broken down in the document yesterday into the DNS abuse, rights protection, and the third one. Name collision, although I have that in. Spec 11.
Yeah.
Spec 11 causes interest commitments.
Right.
Well, Well, that's actually, can we jump to Brian's document for a moment? Because we may as well just divvy this up now, because we probably have things that we're naturally interested in. Here's my big leadership insight that's been drilled into me time and time again, which is that what my strong preference would be is choose something you yourself are interested in. Don't make me give you homework on things you're not interested in. If you tell me what you're interested in, I'd much rather have you do that. So let's just divide up and choose what we're interested in. That's going to be more effective, I think. So we're going to get Brian's document up. So the link is in the chat. People can click on the link. Okay. Yeah, so this first set is what I'll technically call the techie. Yeah, if anyone wants to share with me, I have the document up. The first batch of safeguards are more technically oriented ones. So that's vet registry operators, DNSSEC deployment, prohibition of wild carding, removal of orphan glue records, thick whois records, centralization of zone file access, documented registry and registrar level abuse contacts. Yeah, we basically have three buckets, and I'm going to put the name collision in. I'm going to put, even though it's not a rights protection mechanism, I'm going to put it there because it's, to me it's IP sort of tangentially related.
Never.
Is it not? Am I misunderstanding it?
I wouldn't put it.
Okay, well.
I don't mind it, but I'm just trying to find what's
name collision?
It's technical, isn't it?
Is it technical? Well, maybe
technical.
You should put it.
It's internal network using the TLDs or something through the line.
Okay. I'm thinking someone's using the same name, and I'm probably just misunderstanding it. So let's put it in the technical bucket. Thank you for that helpful clarification.
He's not charging you by the hour.
Right. I'm glad, because he's very expensive for our business.
I'll give you a discount.
Goodwill discount. So maybe we can put that in the first category of the list. Just for our own understanding, we're going to put the name collision in the technical category. So we basically have three buckets here, folks. We have what I'll call the technical category, we have the Spec 11 and GAP advice category, and we have the rights protection safeguard. So let's go around the table and tell me what you want to work on. And it's my hope that serendipitously we won't have everyone clumping into the same category. True. What would you like to work on?
DNS abuse.
Okay. There's a surprise. And Alice, you're going to keep track for us?
Yeah.
Carlos?
I.
You want to just wait and see what is needed? Or?
I'm trying to organize my thoughts in more matrix form than in a list. And I will wait and see.
Okay.
But I will come back with.
Yes, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Fabra.
I'll go for attack aspects.
I'm sorry, for what?
For the first group.
For the first group, okay.
First group.
So we'll call that, so that's the technical stuff.
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have one in our DNS abuse and one in technical. Calvin.
I can go for you of those.
So shall we put you in technical because you described yourself as someone who's very good at the technical stuff?
Give that a bash.
Okay. Calvin will give that a bash. David.
Or name collision. RPM, I suppose.
RPM. Okay, I'm going to go for the DNS abuse.
I'll go for DNS abuse.
Okay.
So and I'm hoping we don't say simply go into the same one.
Which ones do we have? Spec 11, then?
That's DNS abuse.
That's
a third category. Oh, I'm sorry.
Spec 11 picks. Spec.
My, oh.
I have the Spec 11 jacket dice, sorry.
Okay.
I'm lost now.
Okay, I'm lost too.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so let me clarify. I'm only seeing three buckets. The DNS abuse report, isn't that just Brian's work product? That's.
Well, yeah, but those are the technical safeguards. They address the technical.
That's what I thought.
Okay. So let me make sure that I'm not confused. For the DNS abuse report, which particular DNS abuse safeguards are we talking about?
Everything.
The vet registry operators, DNS sec deployment, prohibition.
Okay, so it's a
DNS abuse.
Honor
the word report.
Okay.
Just because that's
honor so everything that follows.
Main product. You're
okay.
So everyone's correct.
Okay. So I have been lumping that into the technical category, but it's really the DNS abuse category. Okay. So this is my mistake. So. Let me clarify to make sure that no one has volunteered for something they didn't intend to volunteer. Okay, so the first category is DNS abuse. The second category is the Spec 11 and GAC advice. And the third category is rights protection safeguards. And the name collision is going in the DNS abuse category. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
That would be technical.
Okay. So then, to clarify, and sorry for misunderstanding, that was my mistake. It's the DNS abuse.
DNS abuse.
So Calvin, you're both in the technical and the DNS abuse. It's only one category. I just was confused.
Okay.
So,
that's fine.
Okay. So we have Drew in DNS abuse, Fabro in DNS abuse, Calvin in DNS abuse. David in rights protection mechanisms, myself in Spec 11 and GAC advice. Kyle, what are you proposing to do?
Which is the least technical?
Which one doesn't deal with the internet?
So what do you think?
Yeah.
Name collision is very different from DNS.
Is it?
Yeah.
What category does it go into?
I think it's its own thing. I think it's own thing. When you talk about safeguards, it's definitely a set of
security
that were built into
the
Well, just for the purposes of though assigning it,
yeah.
Even though it's not DNS abuse, I'm going to have the people who are volunteering for DNS abuse also take on that, because I see it as, even though it's its own thing, I see it as more related to that than the GAC Spec 11 and the rights protection mechanism, unless I'm missing something.
Well, it doesn't really fit in any, I'm not sure it really fits in any of those. This is something that came up as, it's not DNS abuse in that, as far as we know, the occurrence of it is a problem, but it's not an abuse. It's not a
Is it a safeguard? Well, let's step back. Is it a safeguard?
It's not. It's not a trust or consumer protection safeguard.
What is it?
It is a security and stability measure. It's like not allowing people to apply for numbers as TLD. It's that,
So let me ask the bigger question then. Does it fall within our remit at all?
Yes.
Why?
I don't think it falls in the subgroup.
What I'm thinking. That's why I'm asking the question. Karen, do you have another view of that?
I do, but Carmen
first. If it inures to the instability or the insecurity of the DNS, it falls into our trust issue. So it falls into it.
If people are typing in on their internal browsers, uh,
TLD and it screws things up. I think it's kind of.
But is that what it is?
It's not really about,
right.
But it's not like the GAC didn't come together and say, we're concerned about name collision because it's going to affect consumer protection or because it's going to be a vector for fraud or crime or whatever. It's definitely a problem. And, yeah, to the extent that anything breaks down on the Internet, I guess it's a consumer trust issue.
Yeah. Right, but that's way too broad. We're not going to include every single thing that's a consumer trust issue for us to grapple with.
Well, if you haven't included, then you don't need to argue about it.
I'll just take it out completely.
I think we take it out.
I don't think that's that relevant.
Yeah.
Another rabble.
I suggest, though, that we sort of...
Okay.
If we have time at the end, we can come back to it. How about that?
So I would suggest that we document why you don't think it's in scope for this room, because you know there is a whole SSR review that looks at technical security, stability, etc. So you're saying I think you want to define what you're looking at in the sub team in terms of safeguarding consumer trust in a particular way, and this particular set of things, while it had an impact on trust, and that was, one of the things that was part of the discussion about why we need to put measures in place. It's not the focus of the solution. Just maybe you can hear, just noting why.
Well, how did it get in here in the first place? I guess that's my real question.
Well, I think somebody probably thought it belonged here as a safeguard because if you're looking at all of the different, protections that were built into the program. I mean, we invited Francisco to come talk about the name collision framework because
we invited him to talk about it because I think no one understood it, mm-hmm. or at least many of us didn't understand it. Oh, some of us did.
Yeah. I've just add some sort of note as to it was a.
I guess the
go ahead.
And also, just receiving the public comments from the DMS abuse report, a lot of them asked that we expand the scope of that DMS abuse report, which dealt with those 9 safeguards, to include Spec 11, to include rights protection mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
There was no mention of name collision.
Right.
My point. No one sort of asked, well, why aren't you looking at name collision?
Yeah, and that's why I'm pushing back a little bit, Karen, because I'm thinking if this really doesn't belong here in the first place, why do we need to justify saying the reason we're not going to look at it? I'm questioning whether this is even part of our mandate, and
this is Jamie, done at the full level, at the primary level.
It could. And, the reason I was suggesting it was, months from now when we have a report out for public comment, and the comments are saying, why did you look at this as a significant issue? Will we remember why this conversation was solved?
Yeah.
If I try Foxfire or this.
Full dreadful moment.
Well, I think maybe we can asterisk there that we concluded that it was outside our scope and best handled by the security
stability review.
Thank you, security and stability review. So through the SSR
for the
last category, which is the name collision. Okay, so now we took that little detour.
I'll be on DNS abuse still, thank you.
Okay, DNS abuse. And Carlton, you wanted GAC and Spec 11.
GAC and Spec 11.
Okay, so how many people do we have on DNS abuse? Raise your hand. 1, 2, 4. Okay, how many people do we have on rights protection mechanism?
One.
Well, thanks, everyone. Okay, so we're gonna
you're
the best. I can
help you, but you would be the clue.
Well, she knows the stuff. Karen, and you, I'm not
I know. She tells me what to say.
I was sitting between the two of you all morning. That's a team in it.
No, that's all right.
No. Oh, you won. You both.
Yeah, I could if David's going to be completely lonely.
Okay, so let's have Jamie write protection mechanisms. And does anyone on DNS abuse want to switch to GAC spec 11, just so we're a little more balanced?
Can we work on that as a team, or do we work on bring the team together?
Say it again.
Can we work on it as a sub-team, or do we work independently?
I think we'll work as smaller sub-teams. Smaller sub-team.
We call it a Sue sub-team.
A Sue sub-team.
Sub-teams.
Under
sub. Sub-teams. Well, Karen's thinking of that. Fabro?
Yeah, Fabro, for the record, just we have four bullet points and we have four columns, but I'm just thinking that might be one not news. So the first one is script safeguard, which is not a bullet point, and then the first bullet point should be what was intent to safeguard, so this is a descriptive analysis of what we did, and then comes the triggered, and then comes the intent achieved. So I don't think we need a what was impact, or just unless it's just a general question that we just think about the data.
Mm-hmm.
Using data to discuss impact there is huge, although using data to intent achieved is easier because we have a goal and we have an end. So my suggestion would be to remove the what was impact for the point.
So what?
It's almost superfluous.
Right. Got it. That's fine. Yeah, what I hear you saying is that that's more of a subjective question rather than an objective question. That's a group think on this? Yes? Any no's? Drew?
I completely agree. And then I'm just wondering, though, if the intent was not achieved for those for which the answer is no, then do we want one more column for why or what happened, what the result was instead? So here's a safeguard.
Give me an example.
Could you do that with a yes? I'm sorry. You give your example first.
So right protection mechanism, trademark clearinghouse or, I don't know, some right protection mechanism. Intent to protect the intellectual property rights of existing rights holders. Was it triggered? I'll say yes, it was. And then let's say the result, they fulfilled the intent. Let's say the answer is no, because we know of cases in which the existing rights of individuals were in fact not protected by this. So then wouldn't we want an explanation?
It'll be a complicated explanation on that example.
Simple. Okay. Yeah, I know.
You might just want results and then.
See, I think the result is probably not going to be as black and white in these situations. We're probably going to end up the data showing us a mix. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't. These people's rights were protected. These.
All right. That's right. Let's do vetting registry operators.
Yeah.
Okay.
setting registry operator safeguard, the intent at a very basic, this is unofficial, true for the record, very basic level to prevent, you know, a criminal from running a registry, essentially, mm-hmm. right, or prevent consumers from being harmed by a bad registry operator. And then is it triggered? Let's say we find, yes, of course it's triggered, and for that one, I guess what we would say is, oh, it's triggered because all of these background checks took place. And then was the intent achieved? What if we discovered that, in fact, some organized crime group, organized crime syndicate was actually operating a registry. They somehow got a TLD. They got through that. Then the intent of the safeguard would not be achieved. And it wouldn't be as simple as just saying no.
Yeah, see, that's where I think we're going to have to be more nuanced in the way we describe results. You could also say the data shows that 84 registrars went through this vetting process, and there were two instances where we discovered after the fact that these were bad guys and gals and they should never have gotten through the vetting process. I mean, you'd have to give that whole context. You couldn't just say, no, the result wasn't achieved because someone got through, because that's too incomplete.
Does that
make sense?
Yeah, my only purpose of illustrating it is just to say is that intent achieved is not going to be a simple yes or no.
I agree.
That's my only point. Wasn't my specific terrible illustration.
Yeah, Pablo, for the record, maybe the result is scripted. So in that case, 86% used the system, 14% haven't. Out of the 86, there was no evidence of misconduction of the process and so on. And then the other column is it sufficient? And then we ask, they run 5 tests, they should run 10 tests. They never asked Interpol if the guy was a criminal. And
that's where you now put in the recommendation.
The recommendation, so we're creating a recommendation.
Yeah. I think before getting into the recommendation, a sort of why column is going to be important, whether it's yes or no. And it's probably going to be the results will be yes and no.
And then
subdivide the cell and why was it effective, why was it not effective in the instances. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the recommendations, because the why questions are what we really want to answer.
Right. So can we note that in the column, that in the results column, that we're going to be asking why?
I mean, the why is, that's the research right there. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense? This is just my personal observation. This sort of discussion is very helpful because we're trying to put some bones on how we're going to grapple with this. We're framing it. Thank you, Carlton. So I'm finding this helpful and also reassuring because I've been concerned that we have so much to put our arms around and we need to figure out a way to do that. It is hot in here.
Poor Carl.
Come on, Carl.
Hey, Carl, what are you thinking?
Just stand over by the
summer. Okay, and it's 71 degrees, which I think is a reasonable temperature. It was at 74.
It's going to overshoot again. I have no idea what you just said.
Celsius, right? I made it cooler.
I'll trust you.
Or
I thought it was going to go, it's going to get hot in a minute, isn't it?
It's going to get cooler.
Oh, we go stretching again.
Come on. Right. Where are we with the time? So we have. So that's what I was going back to. So was there a reason why we're starting with topic 3 in the work plan? Can we change that to topic 1? Really, is our biggest one, and I'm preferring to get that out of the way if we can, unless, Brian, we have a lot of data needs that we still don't have.
For which, I'm sorry?
For the safeguards. For example, your list, we were brainstorming on where we can get data, and it's these if the data needs we have are not in are not already things that we can get our hands on, but we actually need to hire someone for example, then it would make more sense to push this up later in the process. I mean, we could start populating these columns, but when we get to the results, we may not be able to populate that.
And that's, I think that's exactly right. I think we can put preliminary results. There's a lot of preliminary stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, go back to the chart we were filling out yesterday and see
right.
where we want to sort of focus in terms of more rigorous methods.
Okay. So what I think would be a useful exercise then is to have folks populate this chart to the extent we can over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a reasonable amount of time? Yeah? I'm seeing heads nod, so I'm going to take that as a yes. So let's have as our assignment to populate this chart, and Alice will send us a link to a Google Doc, which means we often work at it at the same time and won't be version problems, to populate this chart. And if we have data that shows the results, and sometimes we will have it, and we can look at Brian's chart as a resource, then go ahead and start filling it in. And if we don't, note that this is something we're going to want more information
right.
for. And then also, I'm volunteering Brian as a resource, so Brian can chime in and say, no. But if people need to reach out to Brian and say, help me out here, where can I find this data, or do we have this, I would say, you know, Reach out to Brian. Brian has changed his no to yes. Yes.
Yes. Well, for the record, yes. Brian, yes. Right.
So good. I think that makes sense. Go ahead, Gal. Okay.
Call for the record. I'm not sure I heard an answer to Carlton's question. Question where he was asking if we're going to be doing this as individual homework or as a sub.
So what I will encourage people to do is connect with your sub team and divide up the work as it makes sense. You can work together, you can have phone calls, you can divide it up and say, you do this, I'll do that. However you want to do it, I leave it to you. But the goal is to get it done. So, for example, I will reach out to Carlton, and we will figure out how we're going to do the Spec 11 and safeguards, and the same for the rights protection mechanism folks and the DNS abuse folks. Does that make sense? Okay, good. Okay. So then let's go back to the document we were looking at, our version 8, which is now becoming our list of questions. Good, we're back there already. Why isn't it now? Oh, because I am still on that link instead of the Adobe Connect. Okay, and you put up our work plan. Why is the work plan on my screen? Okay. So is it just me who has the... Okay, got it. So now you're resharing the... Do I need to refresh my screen, or is there just a pause for everyone? But just as a preview, the next thing we're going to talk about is consumer end user behavior. And here the good news is that because of the Nielsen studies, we have data on this already. So,
Brenda, I'm sharing my screen.
Mike,
I'm sharing.
I'm going to see my screen now.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So for consumer and end user behavior, this is, you know, is where I think we're going back to a contextual inquiry. Even though we're going to be delving into issues of consumer trust, I think these questions give us a little bit of big picture context. Because there's no point in asking about whether the new TLD program has impacted consumer trust if we don't first ask the bigger question of, are consumers even aware of what new TLDs are? So this is kind of our threshold inquiry, I'll say. So with kind of that lens, let's engage in a similar process where we come up with a list of what we think the key questions are. And I think we already have one of them, you know, a discussion of whether consumers are aware of new utilities.
Average user behavior.
Say it one more time, Carl.
Are they aware of them and the cause of any change in their behavior?
Reading that up the ceiling.
Other back of the table.
Like a
man.
I like that.
So, I'm sorry, Carlton. I'm still. Are they aware of them, and what was the rest of it?
And if those introductions have changed their behavior.
And when you say change their behavior, what do you...
Do they go to the new ones? Are they still using the old ones? What are they looking for? Do they change their grooming practices? Those are the kind of things you want to know. The behavior.
Can you speak
louder? Oh. Sorry, Alan. If they're aware of them, what is the result of this awareness? Have caused them to change their behavior, like navigate different ways, or start visiting them, or start using them because they are, may start asking all the questions.
So what does both think about?
About trust and confidence.
So you're having use as a proxy
yes.
As a proxy for trust. Okay.
Yes.
So as a corollary to are consumers aware of new GTLDs, then what I'm hearing the next question is if they are aware of them, are they using them?
What triggered? Did it trigger any change?
Mm-hmm.
And then we look at use as a way to...
But that matters attitude and behavior.
Sure.
So then our second question, as a first question then, we could ask, are consumers aware of the new GTLDs? And then a second question is, if yes, how has the awareness changed their behavior? Other questions within this category, and we can build on some of the questions that are already there, or we can ask new questions, but I kind of want to come up with a key set of questions that we can use to construct our reports and make recommendations. I don't necessarily see this getting into a chart matrix, even though it'll have data.
I'm trying to think of one.
But, yeah.
I think
I think I mean, we'll have data here, but I think it's more of a narrative.
Go ahead, Brad.
I mean, what about perception? Perception would also impact the
medium. So expand on that, Carl. When you say, what about perception? What about perception?
So are you aware of
all predicated on visitation.
consumer
visitation
trust. Okay.
So I was going to just come up. That was why I asked to add in questions of Nielsen, which I haven't checked. I think they went in because we did put them in, but it was where I was saying when you access the domain name extension,
right,
the part after the dot,
right,
if the domain name extension question is descriptive of a service or item, would you expect that new GTLD to have domain names and websites in some way related to the domain name extension concern? And I think that's where you're targeting down so people's, even if they haven't heard of it, they then say, well, yeah, that would be logical. If I go to dot hotel, I expect to see a hotel, not to see something else. And I think, so for example, if you go to dot bank, would you expect to see registration by banks across the globe? If you go to dot Paris, would you expect to see domain names connected to the city of Paris? And it seems to me there that, you know, if you go to dot film, do you expect to see content related to film? We're going to get more of a reply where we sit down and say consumers expect this, expect
right
to see that. So we need some safeguards to ensure that their expectations are met. I think, to me, we go somewhere with that. I'm not quite sure. I think we're trying to do too much. I mean, I think on the awareness point, which is funny, I was just looking at throwing this in. I looked at an article. See, it was the Canadian CNB News, whatever, because they sometimes have articles on new GTLDs on the news. And it was interesting because it was Dot Bank, and they were interviewing Ben from CentralNic as the owner of Dot Bank, which is why they introduced him. So this is the national news. So you think, wow, this has reached awareness here. Yeah. Now, Ben, over to you. As you as the owner of this newly created Dot Bank TLD top level domain, you think if their research is that wrong and they're confused, how is the general public ever going to know what the hell's going on? And he corrected it straight away. He said, you know, we're a registrar, we are not the owner of Dot Bank.
Right.
How do you even get to that stage of awareness and confusion? And I just think this is too, I think it would be very hard to find.
I'm agreeing with
you. No. Well, you're looking at me this time instead of up at the ceiling, so that's just disconcerting.
No.
I
agree with you. So,
I
don't know how we do.
See how we do, how we get beyond that, and in a solid way.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we take the Nielsen data we have and map some of those findings to a question of whether, in light of those findings, are there safeguards that map to these findings? And you can use as an example, what do you expect when you see a GTLD in a certain subject area? Here's what consumers expect. They expect it to relate to that subject area as opposed to be something unrelated. Is there a safeguard in place that that goes to that expectation?
Following up on David's earlier suggestion, if you that bank, would you want to see registrations for bank there? What is the expectation? What is the
just being so low, Carlton, that
I'm thinking that if you're following up on David's suggestion, that's a good way to map it to something substantive,
mm-hmm,
to see whether or not safeguards are connected to the GTLD that are sufficient.
Exactly, and I think on a dot bank, you need higher safeguards to a dot film or something else. But at the same time, that's where I think the whole picture comes together. You've got expectations. So if you go to dot bank and you see bank, you go to dot hotel, you see hotel, you go to dot film. So at some point, there needs to be a level of safeguards to manage consumers' expectations. You can't go to a bank and expect banks and go to film and not expect film.
That's what I'm reading.
So
mm-hmm,
I think that if you can come from that angle, we might.
You might get something out of it that way.
And those questions are in, I think. I think they're in the Nielsen because they're the ones I suggested we put in.
You know, I think they are in the Nielsen.
I didn't recheck it after I suggested. I sort of sent them around and sent them in.
Are we already, like, beyond our time?
No, we have until
4 p.m. Oh, we have until 4. Oh, good.
I didn't mean that. Until
4. Oh, good.
In other words, they need to fall.
Right, we do. No, that's good.
Why don't we tell them you can have till 4:30?
We'll be on the hammock.
let's finish our discussion of this consumer end user behavior, and then we'll take a bit of a break so we can clear our heads. So. then what I'm hearing is, are consumers aware of new GTLDs? It sounds like we're ambivalent about the change the behavior question because we're, it sounds like there's some ambivalence there. I think we do have consensus on do consumers trust new GTLDs, and we have some data there also. And then we have to look at the Nielsen report and map the findings to the safeguards. And as an example, we have these questions that go to the end user's expectation about the relationship between the name of the GTLD and the content of the what's actually in websites within that domain.
I think David Taylor, the other question suggested that ties into that comes on the eligibility. So do you expect any domain name registration under a certain domain extension to have been subjected to eligibility requirements?
Yes.
Again, I think we may see yes for bank,
mm-hmm.
no for film, but it would be interesting to see. And there is, they said that there was, the finding yesterday, there was more of an expectation.
Yes.
Us. So we're seeing that coming out, which I think is
right.
Interesting.
And just in terms of doing some very, as Brian, for the record, doing some preliminary mapping, the GAC Spec 11 safeguards would seem to already sort of fit or map quite well to the
right.
question.
Yes. So I'm just looking at our other buckets because when we ask who the pen holders are, I think we're going to want to be comparing that to what they may be, what other things they could. What else they can work on. So our other big buckets are, I'm wondering if developing countries is going to be a bucket item here when I hear about how we're dealing with developing countries in the application process. I'm wondering if this is something that's going to fall out of the consumer trust issues because we're really dealing with a lot of these issues about outreach and funding for outreach and implementation. It sounds like we're dealing with those in our application process.
Sounds like that's where they should be.
Yeah.
Sort of
yeah.
going through.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Or is it, so let's take that out because I think that's something that we're covering independently. Before we go to pen holders, I just want to finish covering the subtopics within this, which we have, at least on our list, then we're under end user behavior. The next thing I saw was, so not procedural issues, Alex, but scrolling up. Consumer and end user behavior. Okay, so the next thing that we had there was DNS abuse. And my question for here, we have a whole list of questions about DNS abuse being more or less prevalent, enforcement mechanisms, DNS abuse policies. It's structurally, does this belong here, or is this something that's really going to be covered when we're dealing with the safeguards and the public interest commitments? Are those things we're already going to get at, or is this a different exercise, Drew?
This is a different exercise, I would say, which goes back to what I was originally referring to with regard to an analysis about safeguards versus the analysis about trust, where there's tons of crossover and correlations we're going to draw, but there's going to be broader topics covered by those questions.
Even more.
Because this is where we might come up with ideas for additional safeguards that are needed, or a recommendation or an investigation for additional safeguards to, you know, stop this trend if we found a bad trend. But there was a lot more abuse in the GTLD despite the safeguards.
So are you categorizing this then as the trust part of our inquiry?
Okay. Yeah, and, that, and whatever that spreadsheet would look like, which I'm sure Brian already has it in his head. And so we can ask Mr. Excel over here.
This is Brian for the record. To me, these questions feel like they belong in something of an introduction or a sort of lead-in to sort of the state of affairs, I suppose, to be followed by the analysis of the safeguards and their effectiveness.
That's interesting.
I don't know. People just see it a different way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because, I mean, we can answer, well, the first question we can't answer, but we'll get that with whatever kind of TLD abuse data we get our hands on.
And that we're trying to get at through the zone file.
This big project that we're working on methodology for. Yeah.
But the, let's see, the second, third, fourth question seems like they're fairly descriptive, or answers to which would be fairly descriptive, and we could use that as sort of an explanation or sort of an introduction to what already exists.
Yeah, this almost seems like a separate category, not consumer end user behavior necessarily. This is more of a...
Yeah.
I mean, this is really a separate DNS abuse subcategory that it goes under our trust bucket, but it's separate. It's separate from consumer end user behavior, even though it affects consumers and end users. It's not their behavior. It's really what's happening to them, or what isn't happening to them.
Which I think you can make a, as Brian for the record, you can make a logical argument that more DNS abuse equates, it could serve as a proxy for trust in some sense, given that if there's more DNS abuse, there's probably going to be less trust.
You might think so, but I'm not sure that that's the reality at all.
Because of more reasons to come to man, they're still buying it more than anybody else.
Right. That's exactly right.
But proportionally, calm doesn't have the most abuse, I don't believe.
Proportionally
what?
Calm has the most abuse. I think proportionally.
I'm just talking about straight numbers. You're asking a different question.
Right. Yeah. .com has a billion registrations.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Okay.
But
the
factual and .com is not that.
Well, let's take, in any event, let's take DNS abuse out of this subcategory and make it its own category.
Yeah, I may not be explaining or elucidating it right, but I think it's something, there's some sort of connection between abuse and trust, at least in my mind.
Well,
there are two different things. Yeah.
It's easy to assume that folks might conclude if there are higher levels of abuse, there's less trust. But what I would say is the data may show something different. That's just my observation. That may be a logical inference,
right,
but it actually may not be accurate.
But we're looking at it. I mean, given that we're the trust sub-team, I mean, we're looking at it as an aspect of trust.
Yes.
Right. Okay. But I agree with you that there may be a ton of DNS abuse in new GTLDs, but trust levels might remain the same because there's other variables that impact
right.
trust.
Or conversely, there may be a low level of trust and very low levels of abuse.
So I'm
just saying you can't assume that the data is going to reflect what you think is a logical conclusion.
I'm not proposing it as a conclusion. I'm proposing that we're already assuming, by virtue of us including DNS abuse in our trust discussion,
that it's relevant.
That it's relevant to trust.
Yes.
That's
helpful. This is Drew for the record. To build off what Brian's saying, I think just like what our thoughts were when we initially created this consumer literacy category, we're doing the same thing with DNS abuse. This is helping us build the universe in which new TLDs operate and with which they affect all sorts of things in the Internet ecosystem. And from there, I think that's where, as you're suggesting, Laureen, we're going to see perhaps different correlations that might surprise us and whatnot that will be related to trust. But that this in and of itself is going to inform all kinds of things related to trust, and we can only understand trust by understanding this. But when you're talking about trust and making it synonymous with perception, perhaps, then that's where I think what you're suggesting is you could have a very dangerous TLD, but consumers have full trust in it, so to speak, if trust is their perception of its safety versus the reality of it.
Okay. So there's a recognition of the complexity here. Notwithstanding that, if we have a separate DNS abuse category, are these the questions we want to ask within that category? And the questions are, is DNS abuse more or less prevalent in new GTLDs than legacy GTLDs? What enforcement mechanisms do new GTLDs use to curb DNS abuse? And I think as a parenthetical, it's as compared to legacy GTLDs.
Yeah,
that is a parenthetical. As compared to legacy GTLDs.
For the second question. Right.
Yeah, it's a parenthetical for the second question. Yeah, what enforcement mechanisms do new GTLDs use to curb DNS abuse or we could just have a separate question, what enforcement mechanisms do legacy GTLDs use to curb DNS abuse?
In your DNS abuse here, that's excluding rights.
Yeah. It is excluding rights.
Because you still use some of the same mechanism as that.
Right.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's like the work I can.
Okay, so
Maybe we reverse the order here, because the next question is, what do DNS abuse policies look like for new GTLD registries and registrars? Maybe that's the first question before enforcement mechanisms. Is your policy with these things to be enforced?
Yeah.
And then this is a strictly data question. Comparing ICANN's compliance complaint rates with legacy GTLDs versus new GTLDs. And Jamie, correct me here. Am I right that compliance could handle legacy and new GTLDs,
yeah.
not one
yep.
versus the other?
Correct.
So we would have data from both.
Yep.
Karen.
Question on that though, what if you have if there was a certain type of complaint in mind, because not all, I mean, the universe of compliance complaints in TLDs is broader than those, you know, that relate to DNS abuse. It could be, you know, the registry not complying with their RFCs or something.
think there we can look at the compliance categories, which I've actually looked at. There is an abuse category for ICANN complaints that the ICANN compliance group keeps. So there's a whole bunch of categories that they have complaints on, and in fact, most of them are who is accuracy complaints. They're not abuse complaints. So we can key in on that. That's a good point. Are there other questions we want to put in the CNS abuse category?
So would we?
Go ahead.
We're thinking something out right now. Well, we have in our draft statement of work for our data collection a statement requesting that any vendor will provide detailed segmented analysis of abuse rates in all new and legacy TLDs categorized by registry, registrar, and reseller. So what Drew and I are trying to work out is how, number one, how to frame that in terms of a question, and number two, is that something we want to include as a question? And I don't know how CNS abuse manifests itself by registry, registrar, or reseller.
Well, certainly the ICANN contracts, you know, the new registry agreements have a bucket list, so to speak, of items that they think falls into the category of DNS abuse, and it's phishing, farming, malware, botnet, deceptive and fraudulent activity, and IP infringement, and then I think there's a bucket, any other illegal behavior. I mean, it's I think I would map it to the actual contract prohibition, so to speak.
Is it true? So my theory with this breakdown is that you could conceivably have safeguards that work, such as registry agreements, which then could even tie into public interest commitments and all this other stuff. But then you say, wow, this TLD still seems to have a lot of bad stuff, and you would drill down and realize it's all linked to a particular registrar or a particular reseller.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even then have the safeguards with the registrars say, oh, those are fantastic. Oh, it's these resellers. Oh, there's more, you know, we need to do something in the future about resellers. So that's why I think we need that breakdown, but then...
So is it more, is it more prevalent among registries, registrars, or resellers, something like that?
Well, if what we're looking at really is the new gTLDs versus the legacy gTLDs, a question also is comparing the rates between the rates of abuse period between new gTLDs and legacy gTLDs.
Right.
And then if you wanted to segment, you could say, and what about resellers as compared to registrars?
Right. That's what we're getting at, but having trouble just formulating. Or, yeah.
It may also be difficult to get pure reseller data.
That's a fair point.
I guess for that question, is DNS abuse more or less prevalent in new gTLDs? And then... a sub-question of that would be, are there higher rates of abuse per registry, registrar, or resellers in new GTLD?
In new versus legacy?
Yeah.
In new versus legacy.
Yeah,
okay.
To the extent we can use data
on
it, we may not be able to get it. Okay.
But I think that could, if there is a gap with safeguards, that could potentially identify a gap.
Right. Are there any other questions? I'll categorize these as big picture DNS abuse questions under our trust category as opposed to our safeguards category. Are there any other big picture questions that we think need to be answered there? I think that covers a lot of landscape.
Yeah. That creates the universe. Which we'll understand a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So the rest of this category and procedural issues. And I think if we can tackle the rest of this category and procedural issues, figure out who's holding the pen, and set some timelines, I will consider that to be an afternoon exceedingly well spent on it. So it's 5 of 3. Why don't we come back? Why don't we come back at 10 after? But 10 after, really 10 after, and not pretend 10 after. How does that sound?
Good.
Good. Because we're going to find that's going to be a little too challenging, although we may get at that through the data. But do consumers trust, map out Nielsen findings, safeguards? So for the other question, public awareness of new TLDs, that's repetitive. Let's eliminate that. No, not that one. I'm sorry. That stays. The public awareness, I misspoke, public awareness of new GTLDs, that's repetitive of that, right. Can consumers distinguish between a legacy GTLD from a similar name, new GTLD name? I think that's, go ahead.
No.
I think that also is, we don't need that anymore. How the new GTLD string itself, okay, this is David's question, so if we can put that in, yeah, we're going to keep that. These are David's questions about expectations.
David Taylor.
And the Nielsen data gets at some of this. Can we scroll down?
Can you scroll up for 1 second?
Okay, go ahead.
And this is something, go scroll down a little bit. Stop, right there.
Stop.
This goes to something that you and I spoke about. There's a wide range of some TLDs, some which are regulated.
Okay, so let's get more precise with the language here.
It's not that the TLDs are regulated, but the TLDs refer to
regulated terms,
regulated sectors,
regulated market sectors.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's let's see if we can get a little more eloquent with this question also.
I think you could just say, which have safeguards or obligations at one end of the spectrum, because you're not even talking about
how the new GTLD itself may impact user expectations. For instance, consumers will look to the TLD as an indication of content.
So there's a wide range, some of which have safeguards, or some of which come from, some of which suggest regulated sectors, industry sectors or something.
Yeah, so there. Let's change that second part. There is a wide range of, and let's make it GTLDs. There is a wide range of GTLDs, some of which relate to regulated market sectors. I think that's the GAAP language.
Yeah, and then you go all the way.
And I think actually you can which may affect user expectations, or which may have an impact on. Effect is fine. May affect user expectations. Does that capture it more precisely? Yes? Okay. So let's keep that there. Let's scroll down and see where we are then. Do consumers know? Okay. Do we get at this in the Nielsen data, this question, do consumers know where to go to report problems? Are consumers aware of the additional safeguards present in the new GTLDs? We do get it. So we get it related questions.
What about the second
the
part?
First part?
The first
part,
yeah. Part is there.
Is that second part useful?
I don't think so.
I'm not sure it is either.
Assume they're probably not that aware of the TLDs themselves.
Right, they're probably not aware, unless they're, within the ICANN community, and maybe not even then. Okay.
I was going to say, one of the questions, if that's in there, which suggested was that do you expect any domain name registrations under a certain domain name extension to have been subjected to eligibility requirements, which in effect is safeguards? So if that question's gone through, then we may have an answer to that, which may...
Do we have that? Does anyone know if we have that specific question that, that David's asking?
I feel like I've seen it somewhere.
I don't know if it made the last cut, you see. They were the ones I suggested, but then there was some debate, and I didn't join that last debate, so I don't know what, whether they went through or...
Went through to...
To the
Nielsen
questionnaire.
Nielsen survey.
No, it's not the restaurant one. It's the consumer one. It was a question about whether consumers expect higher, and I think it did get in, higher eligibility requirements for regulated GCLDs.
It listed some examples and said, do you expect them to be present?
Yeah.
I just got the questions in the chat if you wanted to help you. I was going to put them as a comment, then I realized I was highlighting everything you were highlighting at the same time, so I stopped.
I noticed.
Yeah, sorry. That's why I dropped out of it and put it in the chat.
But let's put this, do consumers expect higher eligibility requirements for registries of...
Do they expect eligibility requirements?
Okay.
I mean, not even higher. Is there an expectation? What do you expect to see of... Or TLD, or do you expect that anyone can register as a descriptive word?
For specific domain name. Okay. Let's put that question, though, after the preceding question that we just edited, because those are two related concepts.
Are we keeping do consumers know where to go?
Yes.
Okay, we are.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that... Right, that was addressed in the survey.
Yeah.
The answer, no.
I think they had expectations about who's responsible. I'm not sure we asked them, do they know where to go to report?
Well, that's kind of bizarre, wasn't it?
Well, the answers were they expect to go to the law enforcement if there are problems.
Yeah.
Law enforcement, consumer protection,
agency. Yeah, exactly.
Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah. Yeah, we handle all problems.
And I bet that was a French citizen who applied to that.
So the action item here then is, I think it's going to be to mine the data to see if we can answer these questions. I mean, to put it simply, at this point in time. To look at the data, to look to see to what extent the data we have answers these questions.
No, they waited for this.
Okay. Then let's scroll down. And we can eliminate that other action item for this document. I think my question for you, David, and any other person who is more focused on the trademark and rights protection issues is, in addition to our chart, which maps the rights protection safeguards, is there something else we want to be asking or delving into regarding those issues? And you don't have to answer that now, but that's why our placeholder is there. So you can keep the placeholder there for now, but David, think about that.
For simplicity, wouldn't it be better just to keep it all in one place? You can address the consumer confusion stuff there.
Did I get a placeholder for PICS as well? Because I've got a placeholder David for PICS. I can't remember where that was.
Where is that?
Data needs. I'm just looking at it.
I'm not seeing where you are.
Very last bit. I ended up with a placeholder there. I just want. I can't remember what I'm supposed to do on that.
I don't think it was me.
Now.
Yeah.
What should he reorganize this?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're
one job less.
One thing less. So then here we have some orphan questions about consumer and user behavior, about things that don't resolve, and about end users more or less likely to be victims of malware in new GTLDs versus legacy GTLDs. I feel these are, at least this malware phishing DNS abuse question is duplicative of what we've already asked in our general DNS abuse question so that we can take it out. And the do not resolve issue, is that important to our inquiry? I mean, I know it's important in general, but is it important to our inquiry here? And do we have data on that?
Can you repeat the question,
please? Yeah, we had initially in some of our earliest brainstorming sessions asked, do consumers get to the place they intend to go through the new GTLDs? I don't know if we have data on that question, and also I don't know.
This one is does not resolve.
Right.
Yes, this is very much related to the parking. I mean, maybe it's not active.
To me, it's a competition issue with parking, not necessarily a trust issue. I'm not sure.
For the record, you're correct that it could be construed that way, too. Originally, when we talked about it, it was what Maureen was mentioning, and about the actual navigation, and so I type in the new GTLD that is, and let's assume it's supposed to be pointing to a hosted website. Will it resolve? Are there some navigation issues unique to new GTLDs? Is any of this legacy GTLDs that for whatever reason are stopping me? And the hypothesis behind that would be because, you know, there are all these new registry operators and perhaps
UA.
They're not UA. Running registries as well. Or using different back-end providers or doing something that is causing that resolution not to work. And then what you're asking about, I don't know, trying to think how that would be, maybe that would be in competition because of speculation when you're talking about park domains that don't resolve intentionally.
With the old ones, what happens is you land in a reseller that has some, and they try to sell it to you, but it doesn't exist. You type a mistake, and then you land in a place. Oh, you want jamie.biz? You can have it for $10.
Kids.
So I mean, it happens in old, in new, it can be parking, it can be this, but the general impression is bad, I mean.
Yeah, so there. Well, I think a lot of those fall into intellectual property issues where you're talking about either defensive registrations on the one hand, or on the backside where you're talking about typo squatting and all that.
I mean, does it help if we move into competition? I mean,
well, I'm just saying there's two different
ways to look
issues
at it.
For resolving. Like that can mean two different things. So one means exactly what you're saying, and the other thing means what we were talking about.
But what he's saying isn't really an issue. It does resolve. It just
does. Yeah.
You don't like it, what it resolves to.
Yeah.
Jamie. The first one
going
here is universal acceptance. It's just that the browser, the resolver, whatever, doesn't recognize something that does exist.
But these are the consumer behavior. So we did something.
The problem is there, what you're talking about, is not the problem with the resolution of the domain name to an IP address. It actually does resolve. What you're taking issue with is the fact that there are park domains with advertising on it.
But what is this?
This is universal, I think, it's universal acceptance. It's the fact that you type in, Carlos Carlos.mail or whatever.
www.carlos.com.
But for a new GTLD. So Carlos.guru,
right,
it exists, and I try to go to it, but on this hotel network, it doesn't resolve to. It doesn't recognize Carlos.guru because .guru isn't recognized in the browser and in the DNS resolver that the hotel uses. I think that's it.
And this is true again. And the reason why this would be worth looking at in the new GTLDs is because you go from a very small number of registries to an infinitely large number of registries. and especially going forward as potentially new TLDs can be created.
Not infinite.
Not infinite. You're correct. It's not the infinity symbol. There's a number there. And so that's why, you know, has that had any effect, or is everything still operating seamlessly? Is it, Jamie, would ICANN have data on this? And I know, obviously, it can be a complex issue, but as we get into all kinds of recursive DNS servers.
Right. So I don't know. I know that there's been a working group on the university. Karen, you might know more about it. But I don't know if they're collecting. I know that they're working on the problem. I don't know what kind of data that they might have.
This is Karen. So there's a UA steering group that's comprised of a number of different stakeholders. And I know that they, you know, sort of in a similar way that this group have been in search of data, what is out there and what they can commission themselves. And I don't know what, where they are in that process at this point, but let me look.
What kind of people are there? Stakeholders are?
I think there's some like browser developer, some registries, maybe some DNS engineers.
So my question for the group then is this something we want to look into? It certainly could be viewed as falling within the universe of things we can look into, but my question is, where on the priority list does this fall? Is it a priority, or is it something that, if there's data on, you know, is the line up? It'd be a little extra. Brian?
This is really just my two cents, but my feeling is that it has a fairly tenuous connection to trust, and therefore should probably be excluded.
I agree with Brian, but it doesn't mean it has more relation to competition. It has no relation whatsoever to competition choice and trust. It might be related more to other technical issues.
Yes, more technical.
So that's just my
So this is Jimmy, but it's almost more related to, or would fit in the same bucket as, aim collision.
No, seriously.
Yes, I fully agree. Security.
That was
stability. Yeah.
It
should be in a different room category.
Right. Okay.
Game collision is actually a subcategory.
Right. Okay. So let's take these two off. The navigate does not resolve, and the users are used more likely to be victims of malware. The second because it's repetitive, and the first because it's not within our remit really. And that just leaves us with IDM's homographic attacks. Is that a form of DNS abuse?
Yeah, that would fall into
DNS. Okay, so I think that's already covered. Let's take that off. So then we have a next series of questions about privacy policy, which we had discussed. This does relate to one of the GAC safeguards, because one of the GAC safeguards, I believe, applicable to all new gTLDs was that recommending that domains that are handling sensitive financial or health information have reasonable security to protect that information. It relates to it. It's not the same. So this is a series of questions really dealing with privacy. Are there privacy policies? Can people find it? How do they handle personal information, how it's protected, how it's shared. So my question is, do we want to, this is a whole separate set of subject matters, except to the extent it relates to the GAC safeguard, and there it intersects only in a small way, which is the protection of personal information. So my question is this something we want to delve into? We could view it as part of our remit, or we could say it relates to consumer trust, but it's not a priority for us to look at. If we are going to look at it, it seems to me that this is something we're going to need information on, someone who would need to actually look at the new GPLDs, look and see whether there are privacy policies and answer these questions. Are they easy to find? You know, and it's a whole separate, I think, rather, I won't say meaty, but it's a separate research project that's going to require some time and effort. I'm looking at you, Carlos. Yes.
I have an opinion.
I'm sure you do.
It belongs into the Who Is review. Because it's indifferent between old and new GTLD. It's an old story. It's so big that it has its own review.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you that it belongs in the Who Is review, because certainly the Who Is review implicates privacy concerns, because there's a whole interest in how people's personal information is going to be accessed. Is it going to be there for the world, or just for law enforcement, or just for the internal folks who need to keep domains running well and need to know who to contact when there are problems? So in that regard, privacy is an issue for that. But as far as privacy policies go, I don't think that's separate from a Who Is review, because each website each individual website within a domain can have a privacy policy. So I think that's totally separate from the Who Is. So I think for us, it's not a question of is it for another review team, it may or may not be, but is it something we want to tackle now as part of our consumer trust sub-team? That to me is the issue.
I want to answer that. For me, it's even more detailed. It's sloppy registration, so it's not the application.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't affect the consumer using. It's people in the middle making a registration for free to do some abuse and so on. And we have data on that.
So where do you come out then, Carlos?
Yes, I think we should not allow it.
Yes, we should not. No, we should not.
We should not.
Okay.
Because we are concentrating mostly on new GTLDs, all the application process for new GTLDs,
right.
And some impact on the users. So if we go all the way down to registration, resellers, and so on, and where the FBI had, and so on, I think it's not.
Okay. Jamie?
I was just going to say, unless there's a sense that there might be a gap in the privacy policy and how they're observed with new GTLD
versus legacy.
Then in that case, I would say no, because there aren't any new obligations, except for those that you mentioned. There aren't, in general, there are no new obligations. So then it's just a matter of whether they're following national
law.
Right.
But
I don't think it's going to yield much.
Yeah. Drew, then Karen?
Lorraine, what's the most specific thing that has been communicated about privacy requirements in the new GTLD?
The most specific thing is the GAC safeguard advice in the Beijing communique, which advised that for new GTLDs that handle sensitive financial or health information, reasonable measures should be taken to protect the security of that information. That is the most specific piece of advice.
I think the response, I could be wrong on this, but I think the response to that was that if you're doing that, if you have health or other financial or other sensitive data, you have to reasonably protect it, or in compliance with national law.
I think that was the response.
There was no new sort of
Right. There wasn't a new requirement put in. That was the advice, and I think the response was yes, and everyone needs to follow their own laws on this.
Yeah, then I would say, in the universe where we have unlimited resources and whatnot, this would be interesting to see if there was a distinction, but because there's nothing to go on that leads us to believe there would be something different about new GTLDs versus legacy, other than the sheer number of new GTLDs. And, I don't think this is something that we should look at.
Karen?
This is Karen Lund. So this topic was actually one of the metrics recommended by the IAG, which was to compare the number of registries with privacy policies that are clearly and easily accessible by end users. So we did, this is one of the items that the team marked as a baseline. They wanted to compare the legacy versus new. So based on the legacy, it was the
So we have data
we have a baseline, which was reviewing all of the existing legacy TLDs, where 71% had fair accessible privacy policy.
Right. Do we have something on the new?
No, I still do. I don't think so. Not that's published here, because I think it is a significant effort to go look at it, you know, the whole set. So you could decide you wanted to do that, or just if you thought it was reasonable, which I don't know if we do, but or pick a sample or try to.
So that's interesting, because if we have a baseline, then we have, I won't say half the data because it's a much smaller set, right? Would it be, I guess I would ask the question to maybe Brian and the ICANN folks, how resource intensive would it be to just simply ask the question for new GTLDs, to ask the same question that was asked as the baseline, i.e., what percentage of new GTLDs have clearly, easy to find privacy policies? And that way, at least we can answer a very narrow question of how does that compare then to the legacy GTLDs? That's a narrow task.
Using the same methodology.
Yeah, using the same. Yeah, can we do that?
This is Karen. Well, it's a pretty manual process. Yes, you can, and essentially I think it would involve, bringing a temp or somebody to go look at these websites, and, you know, you're looking for somebody who doesn't have any private, prior sort of prejudices about where to look or, what places are likely to be mean when they say something.
Is that how it was done the first time?
Yeah. It's simple.
So then the question,
can a person find this?
Yeah. So then I guess the question for the group is that worth doing? If we have the baseline, do we want to at least have that discrete comparison taken for new GTLDs? Calvin.
Calvin, yeah. When they went and checked websites, were they checking the registrar websites or the registry websites?
The question was the number of GTLD registries with privacy policies that are
registered. So registry
website.
The registry website. But that's normally not where the consumer would go in any case.
Would put their personal data, but the registry has it.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this, just from I don't know if this is a legal question or not, but does the registry's privacy policy, that bind all the registrars that are going to be selling domains within that domain? I mean,
Kelvin again. There is an obligation to carry that through.
To carry it through. Well, then I think, my view, I guess, is if there's an obligation to carry it through, then we would be getting useful information by trying to figure out if the registries have easy-to-find privacy policies. Because even if the end user wasn't trying to find it, at least we would know that's what defines the acceptable rules of the road. Although I'm wondering if what we're really trying to get at is the end user experience and how easy are things to find, then the real place to look is the...
Is, is,
a little bit more the user experience. If the user experience signs into the privacy policy of the registrar, and that increases trust, that would be a question.
But, of course, it really isn't even that, because as an end user, I'm not looking at the registrar's website either. I'm looking at the very specific website I'm on, which is not going to be the registrar's website or the registry's website. It's going to be whatever particular thing I'm on, whatever website I'm on. It has nothing to do with any of that, which makes me wonder how useful it is from an end user perspective.
Yeah, so, David, on that, I think... I think the problem is, as well, is you're never going to know who the registry operator is for the registry. A consumer's not going to know .fil.
Right.
Who operates .fil?
Yeah.
Going to, I mean,
right.
How are you going to know to go and look at .fil's privacy policy?
Right.
Because you don't know who the registry operator is, the name of it.
Karen?
Thanks. This is Karen Lentz. So I think, you know, maybe we need to be a little more precise about terms, because I think, you know, in terms of what the registry personal data is, you know, how that figures in here and what everybody's obligation is. The registrar already has a, you know, their RIA already requires that, you know, they notify everybody of the, you know, purposes for which they're collecting personal data. They don't go outside of that, et cetera. And I think, you know, at least what privacy policies on a website typically have are things like, you know, terms for a user of their website, like
right.
what sort of tracking or cookies
yep.
or whatever else. So I guess, you know, that's what I interpret this question to be about, is how we, you know, if you're on a registry website, how we use it to find what sort of practices they're employing for that website, which may, you know, be important or not important to this group, depending on, you know, as a metric, depending on your sort of
I get
out there.
Okay, we're running short on time. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to. I guess where I'm pushing back, Karen, is I'm questioning how efficacious that metric was in the first place, because it's going to the registry, which I think the public is very unlikely to access. So I'm thinking that was the wrong level to be
looking. Right. I'm not advocating.
Yeah.
Applying the metric.
Yeah.
What we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So let me put it back to the group then. Is this something that we want to do? Do we want to compare privacy policies on registries so that we have something that compares the new GTLDs to the legacy GTLDs on this issue? Calvin.
Calvin, yeah. I'm not even sure that you would find a privacy policy on the .com VeriSigns website, because there is no requirement. I mean, the only reason why we as a registry put it on our website is to tick the ICANN box. Yeah, and if a consumer does land on our website, then we point them towards registrars where they can
right.
buy our product.
Right.
I've got that. Yeah, VeriSigns privacy statement straight out. But that's thanks to Google, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you just type VeriSign.com.
I just put VeriSign.com. English US privacy.
But if you go to the...
I think VeriSigns calls it privacy.
So what's the consensus on this, folks? I kind of would like a yay or a nay.
Nay.
The nays. Okay, so let's take these sets of questions off. In our last, we have 11 minutes.
Getting rid of all of it?
You're getting rid of all of it.
All right.
Maybe keep it somewhere in case we change our mind.
It's in version 7. If you ever get nostalgic, David, you can go back to version 7.
I want to go back to version 1. Virgin 1.
Oops. Virgin 1 or Virgin 1?
For the record, that was Jonathan.
Okay.
developing countries. The last thing that we are on, and then we're going to do a quick, we're going to take 5 minutes to talk about who's holding the pen on things. The last thing we're on is procedures, which I think is the smallest of our categories. So we're going to scroll on procedural issues. So this has to deal with ICANN's enforcement of safeguards and public interest commitments, dispute resolution processes, and that would include, if we can add as a parenthetical, the PIC drip and the rights and what other dispute resolution processes are there that that deal with safeguards, rights protection mechanisms?
So there's the the UR, the URS, the UDRP, the
that's pretty good though, Jamie. You probably populated in the first place for us. Is that complete?
So there is now a PPERP
It doesn't have the UD. Well, I mean, there's still the UD, the UDRP.
So can we add UDRP?
And then there's the P.
Karen, what's another
call where we're the for the dispute resolution over the policies URS is up there over whether or not
handling these
showing this, the, for example, with the tick strip, looking at whether that is an effective way to enforce the public interest commitment. And I assume there could be other questions that relate to the IP issues here for the rights protection mechanisms, but basically asking the question of we have these safeguards, these are in place, how have the methods worked to enforce them? I think that to me is the big picture question. Enforce the use of whatever safeguard or rights protection mechanism we're talking about. For example, I know for the public interest commitments, the GASC gave a lot of advice about the fact that there was some skepticism that this procedure would actually be an effective way to enforce the PIC. So that would be by way of an example. So I think maybe we add as a question here on the top is, are these effective procedures to enforce the particular safeguards at issue?
Rather than procedural issues.
Maybe instead of procedural issues, it's effectiveness of procedures to enforce safeguards. Maybe that's really what we're talking about.
I was thinking procedural issues with the PDDRP and wondering how we can have any if there haven't been any, things like that.
So I think that's a better way to put it. So I think that actually does comprise our bucket list. I think this last category is going to be much less meaty than the others, if I had to predict, because there haven't been a lot of use of these procedures. So it might involve just looking at these procedures and considering any issues that arise from the face of the procedures. Are they costly? Are they lengthy? Do they come up with a final resolution? Those sorts of questions, things that we can just look at on the face of the procedures. That would be our data point, looking at the procedures themselves. That's our data.
And that's different to the RPM. Okay.
General.
I think it relates, but yes, it's a different bucket because it's looking solely at the way the dispute resolution issues work. Really, if you have to enforce this, how is it getting done? Okay, so I think we've narrowed down things, which is really good. I think what we want to do now is consider. In our last few minutes, who wants to hold the pen on these issues? Grouping into sub-teams, and we can go around the table again and tell me what you'd like to be a part of. David, you had your hand up first.
I can't. I was going to say that I'm happy to be effective. Effectiveness of procedures, that seems the logical.
Okay.
I wrote a chapter of a book on the PDDRP.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I can refer to that throughout.
See the authoritative source in this area.
See me.
Right, see me.
Actually, I might put on the reading material because then I can do it quickly.
True.
For DNS abuse, I can hold the pen.
Calvin?
Take what I'm given.
You'll take what you can. Tell me what you're
given. Something nasty. Come on.
Okay. Well, let's go back and see where we need folks then. Carlos, did you ever figure out what you were doing for the other categories? Yes. Yeah.
Well, which other
categories? We got it. Okay, Carlos, you still need to pick one of the other categories in our.
After you look at my picture, I'll negotiate. Or you can assign me what you want, but you have to.
Okay, I will look at your picture.
There's no negotiating with the U.S. government.
No, she can assign to me, except whatever she assigns.
Thank you, Carl. Drew, you already spoke.
What do you want, Jamie? Mr. No one can negotiate with the U.S. government.
Just in this box?
No, not in this box. It's from all the boxes. So do you want effectiveness of procedures, DNS abuse, consumer end user behavior?
I can help with.
Yeah, and the other one, almost everyone's in there.
Yeah, everyone's in the other one, so we're not in that.
Okay, so effectiveness, just so I get to work with David.
Shucks.
We're just going to hang out at Starbucks, remotely talk to each other.
Compete as to who's least effective.
Hal, what would you like?
Up.
Are you interested in that, the consumer end user behavior?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So we'll put Sal there. Carlton? So to be clear, we're choosing between consumer end user behavior, DNS abuse, and procedures to enforce safeguards. Yeah, Kelvin, you.
I'll check DNS abuse then.
DNS abuse, okay.
Procedures.
Procedures, okay. Procedures is becoming populated. okay, I will take, is consumer end user behavior the least populated right now?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll take that. Oh, no, Hal. I will keep you company.
Carlos.
Carlos.
I have a DNS abuse or then you would think. That's okay. Thank you.
Do you have a preference, Carlos?
No, whatever you.
Come join Jamie and Mays. Come on.
No. He's not joining Jamie and me. You guys have company already. Let's do the DNS abuse because I think that's going to be, perhaps require some more time. So I'll put that resource there. Yeah, for Carlos. Okay, and which PICS group do you want to be part of, Carlos? Can you scroll up to show Carlos those choices?
Brenda.
That's it. Yeah, so there's the technical DNS abuse category, the Spec 11 GAC advice, there's right protections mechanisms, and those are the three to choose from. And I prefer you not choose the first one because it already has so many people.
I prefer to be in the second one.
Perfect. You will be with Carlton and I.
The third one makes me dream of Phil Corwin, and I don't like to dream of him.
Okay.
The head of the right protection mechanism.
Okay, so we are now 3 minutes over, but Alex is gonna send the documents, and we will talk more about time frames and deadlines in our next discussion. But I think this was very, very productive. So thank you, one and all.
Thank you, despite the fact that we didn't get to stretch.
I know.
Right. You know, we can, we'll have David advocate one more time for stretching.
And this time I'd like a rounding. Yes! And everyone get up.
Right.
Leave me hanging there.
Right,
guys.
If you all get up, I will help.
Do we have
yeah, that's what I'd like to
know. I'm stopping recording.